You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
It's the first time that Apple have actually decided to tell people about something that they're developing.
High-speed broadband. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
The three main spamming countries are the United States, China, and South Korea.
And I've got some residual powers.
Sounds like something out of Harry Potter.
Senator Coonan, the voice of reason.
There's a couple of systems on a gantry that's actually based on a military missile tracking system.
You put the date on ePrey, and you get a whole service just on
it. How does it go?
IE7, you were having trouble installing it because you had a genuine copy of Windows that wouldn't validate properly. What did you have to do to get past that?
Built a new machine.
But how hard can it be?
Well, it's not hard at all.
At the end of the day, the photography is all about the person's eye and what they see.
If you find something that's inappropriate about your child, you need to do something about it because it will not go away.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm your host, Andrew McComb. Last week, months of speculation came to an end as Vodafone announced that it had won the support of Apple to distribute the iPhone in Australia, as well as the Czech Republic, Egypt, Greece, Italy, India, Portugal, New Zealand, South Africa, and Turkey later this year. For those keen to snap up what some would say is an overrated device, it looks like you may have to wait until Christmas to get your hands on it. Surprisingly, there was no mention of a 3G iPhone in any of the press releases, but logic would say that only a 3G version of the iPhone would be released in this country, wouldn't it? Respected tech reviewer Walt Mossberg of the Wall Street Journal has predicted the 3G iPhone will go on sale in June. It could be rolled out by Apple chief executive Steve Jobs at the company's Worldwide Developers Conference on June the 9th in San Francisco, or possibly on June the 29th, the phone's first sale anniversary. The iPhone has certainly put Apple on the map. Last week on Tech Talk Radio, we spoke of the top 100 brands for 2008, in which Apple sat comfortably at number 7 and worth around about $55.206 billion. Of all the top 10 companies on the list, Apple's brand value change was 123%, more than double anybody else's, including the number one brand, Google. So it's fair to say that the iPhone has something to do with it. So does this mean that Apple has made the best phone ever to date? Many skeptics and pundits which say companies which diverse in their product range tend to become jack of all trades and masters of none. But is this the case with Apple? Some Apple purists, or as Adam calls them, slobbering Mac fanatics, were heard to say that this was the phone for them as soon as the device was released last year, and without even seeing it. Others were not so sure. And what of the Nokias, Motorolas, and Sony Ericssons of the world? As manufacturers of mobile communications devices, would they stand a chance with the Apple iPhone? After all, that's what they do. They don't make computers, they don't write operating systems, they just make phones. Consequently, the question needs to be asked, what's in a brand? Are people so blind to the product that they're buying because of the manufacturer behind it? Do some people just trust a brand that much? Or have we all just become so blasé about technology that we just assume it works, it's too complicated, or we just can't be bothered researching another gadget? Only time will tell.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
The recently converted Mac enthusiast Adam Turner takes a look at the long-awaited iPhone. Jason Sterling from Genesis joins the studio to talk business-to-business technology. Harvey Sanchez, Online Services Strategy Manager for Microsoft, talks to us about Microsoft's Live Mesh. And Tasmanians seem to be the victims of poor internet access. First up, here's the latest happenings from the Tech Talk News Desk with Graham Callaghan.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Telstra drops its next G appeal against the ACCC. Vodafone Australia set to sell Apple iPhones this year. Has Yahoo missed the boat? Talks cool with News Corp after Microsoft withdraws its takeover bid. The Reserve Bank of Australia condemns eBay's PayPal exclusivity policy. And researchers prove what we've known all along. The human brain is not designed to drive a car and talk on the phone. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Telstra last week dropped its appeal in the federal court against the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission, which found that the marketing of the NextG mobile telephone network was misleading and illegal. The ACCC claimed that Telstra had been deceiving when it claimed that NextG provided coverage equal to or better than the CDMA network. In September last year, the ACCC initiated legal proceedings against Telstra and alleged that taglines for its NextG handsets, such as "Everywhere you need it," gave consumers a false expectation of the new network's coverage. In a statement, ACCC's chairman, Mr. Graham Samuel, said that Telstra's decision to discontinue its appeal proceedings brings a welcome end to this matter and vindicates the ACCC's intervention to protect consumers from misleading marketing in the telecommunications industry. Telstra, however, still denies any wrongdoing. A spokesman last week said that Telstra's position on the outcome of the case has not changed, and we continue to stand behind our network and the advertising. Telstra must now pay the ACCC's legal costs. Vodafone have confirmed that they will be selling the Apple iPhone in Australia this year. In a press release last week, the Chief Executive Officer for Vodafone Australia, Mr. Russell Hewitt, said that Vodafone would sell Apple's handset this year, but that he couldn't provide any information on pricing or whether or not a 3G model was imminent. Mr. Hewitt also said he was unable to disclose an actual release date, but industry analysts believe it is likely to coincide with the opening of the official Apple store in the Sydney CBD around June. This is the first official confirmation from a mobile carrier that it will release the iPhone locally. Mr. Hewitt also refused to answer questions about Vodafone's product exclusivity. Analysts believe that Telstra and Optus will also offer the device. A spokesman for Apple Australia said, "Apple has nothing to announce." In the United States, the iPhone currently retails for $400 for the 8GB version and $500 for the 16GB version. Only 1 week after instant messaging and internet search giant Yahoo snubbed its nose at a takeover bid from Microsoft, talks with Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation have also reportedly cooled. Microsoft abandoned its offer to buy Yahoo for as much as $33 per share, or $47.5 billion. Now, an apparent cooling of interest on News Corporation's part has narrowed the field of options for Yahoo, which is under pressure to find an alternative solution in the face of growing angst from shareholders. With ever-increasing pressure from search juggernaut Google, Yahoo is now continuing its talks with AOL. But Mr. Jordan Rowan, founder of digital media advisory firm Clear Meadow Partners, told The Age BizTech last week that he didn't think a deal with AOL would improve Yahoo's position, and that in fact it would increase dependency on Google. Mr. Rowan said that a Yahoo-AOL merger would have much of the integration hassles of a Microsoft-Yahoo merger without the payoff to Yahoo shareholders. eBay is under pressure over its PayPal exclusivity announcement, with the Reserve Bank of Australia voicing its opposition to the policy last week. The world's largest online auction house is hoping the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission will allow it to enforce PayPal exclusivity for payments on its Australian site. But last week, the Reserve Bank of Australia made a submission to the ACCC, which suggested that allowing PayPal exclusivity to eBay would end competition with other online payment systems. eBay Australia has indicated its intention for all buyers and sellers on the site to use either PayPal or cash on delivery. If successful, this would eliminate all other popular forms of payment, including direct bank transfers, direct credit card payments, and competing transaction fund clearance systems such as the Australian-based Paymate and Centricom. Paymate and Centricom have also both argued in submissions to the ACCC that forcing all eBay users onto PayPal would create such a large user base that competitors would also be severely disadvantaged when trying to compete on auction sites other than eBay. eBay is also seeking immunity from prosecution under the Australian Trade Practices Act, claiming that enforcing exclusive use of PayPal is for the public good. Critics, however, say the move by eBay is merely an attempt to increase its PayPal customer base, while gaining extra fees for each eBay transaction through the enforced use of PayPal. And finally, researchers from the Carnegie Mellon University in the United States have proved what we suspected all along, that driving and mobile phones simply don't go hand in hand. A study has shown that multitasking, especially mobile phone use, while driving a motor vehicle, negatively affects the performance of all tasks, but especially degrades the ability to drive. Neuroscientists from the Centre for Cognitive Brain Imaging have measured the effects of mobile phone use while driving. They used a driving simulator, 29 adult subjects between the ages of 18 and 25, and functional MRI scans, which monitor brain activity by measuring blood flow changes in the brain. While having the subjects use the driving simulator, which displayed a simulated driving exercise, the researchers found that listening and talking to someone reduces the ability of the person to drive. According to the study, when people are listening and talking while driving, they are exceeding the physical ability of the brain to work effectively. Tech Talk News is compiled by Dr. Ron, and I'm Graham Callaghan, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Optus sinks the boots into Canberra this week.
Think of the bandwidth that would be involved.
Yeah.
It cost you billions of dollars.
Well, will if it was one particular carrier, yeah. Yes.
If you're a home user or a small business, then there's very cheap and very, very effective software solutions out there.
So what's the point of high definition if it's going to look grungy and horrible?
That is a very good question.
Why do you put it in the fridge?
It's the TiVo of the Foxtel world.
That's right.
Okay. Keeps me busy at work building spam filters.
I'm sure it does.
Yeah. I'm not too stressed about that.
There's an Apple store in Shopping Town in Doncaster now, which is very nice.
Genuine I should
Apple.
Get out more often, shouldn't I?
What is the point? There is no point. It will not work here, will it?
No.
It will not work here.
Let's ponder that, shall we?
Essentially, what you're doing is you're buying the service to get the program going.
I actually gave up on Anna. I wanted Sheldon. She wanted to take me to the bedroom. But having said that...
This is why I always dread this segment.
Took the words out of my mouth.
You know what you're talking about?
Absolutely no idea whatsoever.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Shoot.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Thanks for being in, listening range of us this evening, wherever you are around the country, around the world, whether in your iPod, on the train, who knows. But thanks for joining us. The panel this evening consists of absolutely everybody. We've run out of microphones. JD's in. He's going to talk. He's brought a retro Mac in, although it seems to have done a bit of an upgrade since I last saw it a few moments ago. Maybe he's gone back to the new one. Dr. Ron's here this evening, and Adam Turner's come in because he couldn't resist the iPhone breaking news technology, which is all happening out there. How are you all, gentlemen?
I'm very well. I'd just like to say that I've registered a company today. I'm going to start selling 3G iPhones in a few months.
Are you?
Yeah, along with
When's
everybody
When's your
press
else. Release coming out?
And how short will it be?
Adam, what Telstra's one was two words.
No, Telstra hasn't put one out yet, but Vodafone put their press release out last week, and it was about 50 words, I think. Optus put theirs out today, and it was 35. So Telstra's the only one left, and I think their press release is going to be two words. Us too.
Well, Telstra last year said to Apple to go and make socks or something, didn't
they? Yeah, stick to your knitting. I'm waiting to use that in a blog post. When Telstra put their foot out of place, it'll be Apple tells Telstra to stick to their knitting.
Yes, I've seen those socks. You can buy them. They're very expensive. You go into some of those shops and there's a little green thing hanging on the wall, which is only, you know, for your iPod-y thing.
Yeah, and they're locked down.
Your eye sock,
you can only wear them on one people's feet.
One people.
What about those little socks you get for your mobile phones to keep them warm in the winter? I've got one of those.
Have you?
Yeah.
Does it work? Does it keep it warm?
I suppose it does. I've never asked.
Well, exactly. Technology.
So that was money well spent.
Absolutely.
That was a freebie. All right.
Okay. Oh, goodness me. Well, there's been lots happening this week. We're going to get into it very shortly. But first up, Dr. Ron has... we're all going to get a coffee while you go through the correspondence this week.
Oh, I've got truckloads of correspondence this week.
Oh, I'm getting more in too.
I can hear it going digging in the background there.
Yeah, good.
Hello to new forum users. In the last week, we've had the following people join the forum. WizKid. Hello, WizKid. And also Mountain Wombat in the Snowy Mountains, which is very exciting. Got a listener up in the snowy, so that's
great. Good.
Yes.
You could ask him if his phone stays warm, does he have a sock on his phone?
He must have something, surely. Ben from Tasmania says, hi, guys. Over the past week, things have been really bubbling away here down in Tasmania with regards to Telstra's monopoly of the fibre running across Bass Strait.
Yes. We consider ourselves exceptionally lucky that we got your email, Ben.
Yes. He points us at a website for updates, www.digitaltasmania.org. So that's a good one to have a look at.
Yeah, we're going to talk a bit about that later tonight. Poor old Tassie.
Poor old Tassie. A listener, James, says, hi, guys. I thought you guys would like this post, an understandable description of Microsoft Mesh. And he's pointed us to a blog post. Thanks for the update there, James. We're going to be talking about Microsoft Mesh a little bit later.
We are. We've actually got Microsoft talking about it. Harvey Sanchez is going to have a chat to us. I spoke to him during the course of the week and I found out what on earth Mesh is.
He's going to dispel all the myths and and hopefully enlighten us to some
extent. I don't know, but we all get 5 gig in the cloud.
That sounds good.
Does that sound exciting?
5 gigs, good.
Yeah, good.
Tony says, I had the unfortunate task of having to attend hospital for an operation and did not have the chance to correctly divert the phone at my office. As I pay for a business line, I thought there would be additional services provided. However, this was not to be. After being transferred 5 times, I was told a diversion to be organised by Telstra to another Telstra-provided service, being a virtual message bank service, would incur a charge of $55. I was on the phone for over 70 minutes to be told that it was not Telstra's responsibility to for customers in medical circumstances to divert telephones, and he got charged. He's not very happy. He thinks that perhaps Sol should try and ask or wait on hold for basic Telstra services and put up with the usually untrained staff. Oh, he gets quite angry.
So what happened? I'm sort of a bit of...
There you go.
He went somewhere and he had his phone diverted.
Tony unfortunately had to go to hospital for an operation.
Yeah.
And he thought that seeing as he had a business telephone service, Telstra would remote divert it for him to another number. And they said, no, get up out of your hospital bed, go and divert it yourself, or we're going to ping you $55 to do it.
Oh, okay. Have you heard of remote access? That's $5. Just get them to connect that and then you can do it yourself.
Well, he didn't explain that to him. That's not very good.
I know. This is the dilemma with telcos, isn't it?
Mm.
But Optus, I don't think, can even do that, because I know when I renovated my house, I had all the wiring pulled out and everything, and I wanted to divert the phone. And I rang Optus and they said, no, we physically can't do it. The only way it can be done is from your premises.
Oh, what a load of nonsense.
So I had to get out the phone, and I had a phone with the wires hanging out, and then I had the wires hanging out of the wall, and I'm there like holding this wire to this wire and this wire to this wire and then dialing with my nose to try and divert the phone. I got it to work in the end, but I wasn't thrilled about it.
It's funny you should mention that. I think, when Optus have their resale product, I think, and I'm going from memory here, that they don't have access to that technology that Telstra does. But also, having said that, if you go into your online billing with Telstra, I know, Dr. Ron, you've had all sorts of fun and games with the online billing system in the course of years.
I have.
I think you can actually do it there too. If you go and set up a diversion when you pay your bill, you can see your services and you can do diversion, I think.
Interesting.
It might have been a mobile one that I saw, but it might be landlines too.
Tony, have a quick look at that one. That might help if you get online billing set up.
Yeah, that's $55 for the sake of...
Just doing one diversion, that's pretty rich. Yeah. Hey, Ken writes, I've never heard anyone address this. Why is it in both the Windows and Mac worlds, the up arrow makes things go down on the screen and down is up? Left goes right.
JG, we'll throw that one over to you.
And right goes left.
He's with the Mac.
Tiling horizontally actually tiles things vertically. Vertical tiles horizontally. The Windows world adds one more backwards thing. To stop the computer, you have to click the start button. JD?
Well, that's Windows.
That's very good.
Yes, I never thought of it that way, but it does. But I guess you're scrolling down the document by hitting the down arrow, but to do that, it moves it up, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it's more to do with usability. So I want to go down, so I hit the down arrow.
Mm.
So physically what happens on the screen is the reverse, but it's the intent, I think, that's important.
I think that's what it is. Thanks for that, Ken. And we've got one last quick one from Simon. Simon tells us there's an interesting article on page 3 of today's Herald Sun.
That's a Melbourne newspaper, for those wanting to know.
It is, stating that soon a valid SIM card will have to be in a mobile phone to be able to make a 000 or 112 call due to ongoing abuse of the service.
Is that good? Is that bad? Normally, if you come across a mobile phone, it's going to have a SIM in it anyway. Like, surely, the only reason why you wouldn't have a SIM in it is the one in the kitchen cupboard and the kids have found it, turned it on and started pressing numbers.
You'd think
so. It's probably a good thing.
I don't know. Tell us what you think. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. Thank you to everyone for all their feedback this week.
Yeah, it's been good. Keep it coming. Gee, it was 10 minutes, wasn't it?
It was. I told
you. We'll have to go to a break very shortly. I've got lots to get through tonight.
Dr. Ron's mailbag.
All right. Just an apology this evening, too. We were promoting to have Jason in this evening, but unfortunately, we got our wires crossed. And that's what happens when you reschedule and reschedule and reschedule. Somewhere along the lines, you lose that email that is the vitally important bit. So if you're tuning in for Jason, he'll be on soon, coming soon.
He's like very keen. He'll be in.
He will. Yep. Don't you worry about that. Let's talk about Windows XP Service Pack 3 because it's fairly topical and hot at the moment. Many news things out today stating that there's been like chaos, pandemonium right across the world because of XP. In particular, there's a bit of a ruckus about the AMD chipset not handling the Windows XP Service Pack 3 too well.
That's pretty bad considering the amount of people who'd be using that.
Well, I must admit, I brazenly went into the unknown and I loaded up on two machines, including Exhibit.
Oh, you've done two now.
Exhibit B here, says he, pointing. Good for radio, isn't it? Just pointing to the laptop here on the desktop. This machine here, which is a AMD chip set device, is a laptop and running on XP 3 without a problem whatsoever. Also at the office, I have a machine with AMD chipset on it as well, and that also went across flawlessly. The scary part is it makes the screen very small when you install it, and it comes with an installer this time too, which is unusual. Normally you just run the Xe and it goes off and does things, but this one came with an installer. So in the Tech Talk radio camp, I can not fault XP3 at this point in time, but others have not quite so speaking highly.
The general rule
of it
is don't touch it until people stop complaining about it.
There you go. I'm not complaining about it. Works.
Well, no, you're not, but there are other people who are.
I'll wait to see what else.
Yeah, if you see reports of people saying it's a dud, just wait. And then when people stop saying it's a dud, wait a little bit longer. Then try it.
Okay.
Don't be that guy to do it first. There are poor people who get paid to bang their heads against the wall and try technology first. If that's not your job, don't put up with it. Just wait until they get it right.
Wait until the dust settles,
yeah,
is what you're saying.
Wait until the dust settles, yeah.
Well, I must admit, the machines I loaded on weren't mission-critical machines, but I was very curious to see how it went.
Yeah,
it went,
but your XP2 machines should be doing all right. Sorry, your SP2 machines should be doing okay.
Yep.
So there shouldn't be any urgent need to put the next service pack on there. So don't do it until people say it's all right.
The only difference that I've noticed, everyone said there's a massive speed improvement. Well, I can't say that I've seen that. The only thing that is a little different that I noticed out of the box is the remote network connections in it. But it also, it is allegedly talks to Server 2008 really well in a business environment because it brings a lot of the security that Vista offers when it talks to Server 2008 down to the XP platform. So,
are you using Server 2008 at work?
I've got it, but I haven't loaded it up yet. It's sitting there. I went to a Microsoft gig not so long back, and they said, here, have Server 2008. I said, yeah, good, thanks.
That was nice.
I'll add it to the collection. I'll just put it in the corner and put it on the shelf until, as Adam says, it's been out for a little while and it works well. And then I will load it up and have a bit of a play. But I am interested in the server core technology, which it offers and things like that. But if you're interested in that, have a listen to one of our past shows because we actually had Microsoft on talking about it.
I see, just before you go on, I see the one of the senior Microsoft engineers has said that if you install Service Pack 3, you can't downgrade your version of Internet Explorer. So if you've decided to dabble with IE 8 beta, you can't go back to IE 7 or 6, in fact.
Ooh, really?
Ugly.
Actually, the story I heard was slightly different, if I may.
Who's that voice? Where's that? In my headphones.
Hello, Graham Callaghan. He wasn't on the panel when I introduced him. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Dr. Graham Callaghan.
He's a lurker.
Apparently, the SP3 only works with IE 7, so SP3 won't even install if you've got the beta of IE 8 installed.
Well, how are they going to fix that then when IE 8 ripples through the forced upgrade department?
It'll work then, but they're not liking having the latest service pack and the beta web browser on the same machine. And it also forces you to IE 7, so you can't downgrade to IE 6 after you install the service pack 3.
Oh, goodness me.
So you're stuck with one choice of Microsoft browser if you go to Service Pack 3.
And if you've got a Mac, you haven't got any problems at all, isn't that right, JD?
Absolutely.
Or stick with Firefox.
The sun is shining, the birds are singing.
Speaking of the sun is shining, there's a little bird tweeting at the moment. Well, tell me about this phone call you got from Steve Jobs during the course of the week.
How do you know about that? Did I tell? I have an iPhone at the moment, and it rang the other day, and a man in an American voice said, "Hi, it's Steve Jobs here. I'm calling from Apple to see how you like your iPhone." And of course, yes. Thinking about it now, it was obvious that it didn't sound like him, but it sounded enough like him that when it caught you on the hop, you're like, "Uh-oh, what's going on here?" And I'd just been talking to some PR people from Telstra, actually, and mentioned to one of them that I had an iPhone at the moment. So I guessed it was them, and I said, "Oh, this is such and such from Telstra." I don't know, it's not. And we kept talking. I thought, okay. And he said, "So, where did you get your iPhone from?" And it came from a friend of a friend who imports them and hacks them. So I thought, I don't really want to tell him that at this point. So I was like,
given that he's got my phone number,
so you've got this American
magically fell out of the sky. I said, he said, "Oh, that's very interesting." And then I said, "So what time is it there in California right now?" And he got it right. He said, "Oh, it's about 11 o'clock at night." I said, "You're working very late." He said, "Well, that's how I became so successful." And so he strings me on for a couple of minutes, asking me where I got it from and what I think of it and what network I'm running it on.
and I'm thinking a million miles an hour. Who is it? What am I going to do? What are they trying to find out?
Real
How
Steve
does someone
Jobs.
Know? Yeah, I was pretty sure it wasn't, but who is it? And then he starts laughing and hands the phone over to my wife.
Oh, no.
Who has got a guy from work with an American accent to ring me up and said, she said, can you do me a favor? Do you know anything about iPhones? And he said, no, I don't know if I'm the right person for this. She said, oh, it's a practical joke. He said, I'm in. Straight away. He said, what am I going to do?
The cloud, Microsoft, this is going to be big.
Mesh.
Yeah.
Mesh.
You had an email there before. Did you say someone had a good explanation site as to how mesh works?
They did. It was a blog site. I can read it there. Better still, we'll put a link maybe on the forum or on the website. But it's a good explanation as to how it works. There's a lot of confusion at the moment about it.
It's in beta at the moment, and it's English only. It's going to go live in the not-too-distant future. I did ask Harvey when it was going to go live, and we got the traditional Microsoft. When it's ready, it'll go in no uncertain terms. Wouldn't commit to a date. He just said, because it's English, it'll roll out here first. Well, that's great. So, but in essence, what it's going to let you do, Dr. Ron and others, is share information from software applications you have, like email, sort of address books, anything you want to share with people. There's a public and a private sector in your cloud. You get 5 gig in the cloud. And then it allows you to, you know, your PDA or your mobile phone will then sync via the internet and pull down your contacts. So you put a contact in your one at home and all of a sudden it appears in your mobile phone.
Google.
I'm glad you coughed and mentioned that. So
Adam's got a Google, a frog in his throat.
Absolutely. So, but here we go again. Anyway, I did actually have a chat to Adam Sanchez, as I said, from Microsoft Australia. And I asked him the very question, what on earth is Mesh? And this is what he had to say.
Microsoft Live Mesh is basically a new service that Microsoft just announced. It's in technology preview. Basically what that means is pre-beta. So let's just put awareness out there that it's not currently available for most people yet because we're in development, but we wanted to give people a preview as to what we're trying to do. But basically what Live Mesh does, if you think about your digital world today and you think about the type of devices that you might have and the type of data that you might have in different types of devices, it basically allows you to really unify all of those devices together into your own personal mesh. So, for example, if you have, you know, a PC at home and a PC in the office and a media device or a music device or, you know, you might have a mobile phone and you've got data spread across all of those devices. Well, with the power of the internet, you have the ability to integrate those all together. So, for example, if I wanted to share documents that's sitting on one machine, I'll be able to get access to those documents from whatever device I might have inside my mesh. So you can collaborate with all of your data, with all of your devices, and also have the ability to share that with other people as well, with friends and colleagues. So you can then share devices and share data that you might have on your mesh to other people, and you'll be able to get access to that as well.
So how does it work?
Yeah, well, it basically works by integrating creating a live mesh account, which is basically using a live ID. So if today you're running Hotmail or Instant Messenger, you pretty much have a live ID already. And basically what you do is you start adding devices to your mesh. You get a graphical interface that allows you to incorporate your PCs, your mobile phone or your media device. You know, we work cross-platform, so you can have access to a Macintosh device or an iPod or a BlackBerry device and have it all integrated into your mesh. You start adding those devices onto your mesh. Then what happens is that you start sharing the documents that you want to share across your mesh as well, and you can create folders. You can cut and paste documents onto it, or drag and drop documents to it, any type of files. And you'll be able, once they're in your mesh, then they're accessible from anywhere.
All right. So how big is the mesh? Do we have any limitations? Like, obviously, there's broadband considerations when it comes to getting the files from, I guess, the PC or the device to the mesh. Are there any limitations with how much sort of files you can move around?
Well, see, what we do with mesh is that we create what's known as a live desktop. And in the live desktop, which is basically storage on the cloud for you, we'll give you up to 5 gigabytes of storage. Basically, if you wanted to post something up there and you wanted to get access to it from, for example, a mobile device. But the reality is also is that, you know, you have storage on your local PCs. And what we're not storing everything on the cloud. We're storing things that are sitting on your PC as well. We're just sharing those with your other devices that are connected to the internet. So you can have as many files as you like based on, you know, the size of your disks, and you still be able to get access to that. So, you know, we provide you a cloud-based storage service, 5 gigabytes, and you can put stuff there, but that doesn't restrict you from how many files you can put up, because ultimately what you're doing is you're sharing your hard disk of all your devices on your mesh.
All right, we're sharing some information here. Maybe it's a little bit personal, maybe it's a little bit business sensitive. How secure is the cloud?
Well, everything that you do in regards to your own mesh is basically controlled by you. So you're the only one that has access to that based on your authentication. So we provide a live ID. It's your authentication for access to your mesh, similarly to the same ID that you use to get access to your Hotmail account or to your Instant Messenger account. And so with that authentication, you're in control of your own mesh.
What sort of software do we need to connect to it? You mentioned before remote desktop. Do we need to download an application to run on our devices before it can connect?
Yeah, so what basically happens when you create a live mesh account, you basically install a little application on your machine. This, at the moment, works with Windows, but we are working towards supporting the Macintosh and other platforms as well. But you download a little piece of software, and this piece of software just allows you to have access to your mesh. It controls the way you connect to your mesh, how you share documents, and also what other people are doing, because you might be part of other people's meshes as well. So you just load a piece of software. Once that's installed, you have access to your desktop, to your live desktop, and to the things that you want to create inside your mesh. And then basically you have the ability to get access to that from any browser. So you need to have that instance once, but if you, for example, go into a kiosk, you don't have to install any piece of software. You're just accessing your mesh. And that basically allows you to do that from any browser, from any device, as long as it's connected to the internet.
So what about the not-so-modern mobile phones? And I don't mean the PDA types or the devices running, say, Windows CE, for example. What about a Sony Ericsson or a Nokia, which basically has Java running on it? Can we access the Met using a little Java application, providing it can connect to the net?
Ultimately, we will support multiple types of devices and multiple types of platforms. And absolutely, you know, if there is if at some point there is an application that can run and it can connect to the internet, we'll be able to connect to it. We'll be able to share it. And that's basically what you're doing. You're looking at all your digital environments that you might have. And if I look at myself, for example, which I kind of feel like I live a digital lifestyle from at work to at home to, you know, how I am in my car. I want to have all of my devices that I have spread around connected and having the ability to share those documents. Another good example of it is the fact that, you know, I work from home quite a bit. Well, I don't need to take my work PC home. I'll be able to connect to my work PC from home. So I have access to my whole entire operating system from work from within my home PC, allowing me to get the same level of access to the things that I do from home. And you'd be able to do that from multiple devices, and that's ultimately the aim. So we want to make sure we can support sort of certain ones at the moment, and then looking forward in the future, we'll support other types of devices and other types of platforms.
All right, let's look at it from a business point of view. One of the great things in business these days is the Office suite of products with Exchange Server, where you get to have personal contact folders and you have shared contact folders or public folders. With the cloud, can we actually take our public contact folders and store them up there so that when we are out in the field or remote, that we can be just like working at the office and, oh, I know where that phone number is, or I know where that email contact is. Is this part of what the cloud is going to do, or what Live Mesh is going to do, allow us to share that information that is part of an application or part of a database of a shared application?
Yeah, in fact, share the whole application, and that's what we're trying to do as well. One of the key elements to this, and one of the great productivity elements to it, is the fact that you have the ability to share an entire application. So, you know, you don't need to be running a certain application from a certain PC if you don't have it installed. You'll be able to get to share that and get access to that from any device that you're connected to your own mesh. And in your example around, you know, contact lists and address books, etc., it's a typical way of people want it, or a typical application that people would want to get access to if they're on the road all the time, and they don't want to carry it with them. Having the ability to connect to it is critical, and I think those are the sort of elements that we will put in place and we'll be able to do as part of this technology.
And finally, too, when do we get it? When does it go live?
Well, it's in technology preview, which basically what that means is that it's pre-beta. We hope it is English at the moment, which is a good thing, because if it is English, Australia will be one of those countries that gets it pretty quickly. We don't have to wait for localization in regards to language. So once it becomes beta, which we're hoping will very, very shortly, we will certainly be part of that beta program. And then once then after that, it'll be commercially available to anybody. So, you know, this is something that we've been working on actually for the last 2 years. And it's something that we're very excited about. And the fact that we even announced the technology preview, which we don't normally do before it becomes available commercially, that means that we're really close and we're really excited. So hopefully you'll be hearing more about that shortly.
Harvey, thank you very much for joining us on Tech Talk Radio this evening.
Thank you, Andrew. Thank you for your time.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. So time to put your head in the clouds, boys. You're going to give it a go when it comes out?
That's a good interview with Harvey there.
Yes. Yes, he was. Yes, it was good. Well, now we know what it is. And when it's going to be launched is to be advised. So watch this space, I guess. We'll tell you all about it. Now, we're going to take a break in just a minute because we have been going on a lot tonight. Adam's here to talk about the iPhone. He has brought one into the studio in the living, breathing flesh that an iPhone is. There's lots of news in relation to iPhones very shortly. Yes, as we alluded to in the early part of the show, everyone's getting in on the act. You'll be able to get them at the Corner Milk Bar very shortly. Their press releases will be out sometime.
There's Mac operating systems tonight are giving the other operating systems run for their money in the studio here, because we've got iPhones, we've got MacBooks, and Andrew and I have got PC laptops, haven't
we? I'm waiting for my call from Steve Jobs. He'll get me over the line. He'll say, why aren't you?
I wonder if he's got... Yeah, well,
Lid bumps into him in Cupertino over there, because she shops down the road from where he lives, apparently.
I wonder if he's got a feedback number.
I don't know. Be very interesting to see. Anyway, we're going to take a break and get a coffee. We'll be back with the iPhone after this.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1300 664 882 and leave a voice message. That's 1300 664 882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You are indeed. Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron, Adam Turner, Justin Dunlop, and Graham Callaghan somewhere. I think he's gone out to get a power supply or something. Doing some maintenance as we speak here on the Tech Talk Radio studios. Anyway, we're going to talk about iPhones. Adam has one.
It's coming.
It's coming, apparently. Everyone's putting out press releases and all that sort of stuff. Now,
everyone's reselling them. We're going to start selling them on the Tech Talk Radio website, I think.
With a coffee cup.
Value add. We'll buy a coffee mug, we'll throw in an iPhone.
Yep.
So is it really all that it's cracked up to be? Adam was just popped in this evening, so we've got his view from the couch here, all queued up and ready to go. So we'll go from the live Adam to the virtual Adam.
And then back to the live.
And then back to the live Adam. Yes, are you surprised that it's taken this long to come out, Adam, just out of curiosity? That, you know, 12 months
really.
It's taken?
It's the sort of standard Apple procedure, really.
Okay. All right. Here's Adam's view from the couch for this week.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch on Tech Talk Radio.
The next phase of my Mac transformation has begun. I'm falling in love with the iPhone. Last week, Vodafone announced it will start selling the iPhone in Australia later this year, and the big question is whether we'll see a 3G iPhone in Australia, but I'll let Andrew and the others on the panel talk about that. I've recently been playing with a US iPhone hacked to run in Australia as research for an upcoming magazine feature. So I thought I'd tell you a bit about it. I know there's been a lot of hype about the iPhone, and I don't want to be yet another slobbering Mac fanatic, but the iPhone is amazing and I'm pretty sure I want one. The iPhone is a very sexy looking phone, but beauty needs to be more than skin deep for a gadget to impress me. When it comes to functionality and the user experience, the iPhone delivers in spades. Unlike my clunky iMate Jazz Jam running the cumbersome Windows Mobile 6, the iPhone's interface is easy to use and you don't feel like you're constantly fighting with the phone. All the icons are nice and big, so there's no need for a stylus, and none of the menus are more than 2 or 3 levels deep, so it's easy to find your way around without an instruction manual. If I had to list 3 quick features that impressed me about the iPhone, the on-screen keyboard would have to be one. I always thought an on-screen keyboard would be no match for the big slide-out keyboard on my Jazz Jam, but I was wrong. In some applications, you can even turn the iPhone sideways to make the keyboard bigger. The keys look a little too small for stubby fingers or thumbs, but the trick to typing on an iPhone is to forget about that and just type. The touch-sensitive screen is surprisingly good at figuring out which key you pressed, but the iPhone's secret weapon is its excellent corrective text feature. If you make a mistake, it takes an educated guess as to which word you meant and substitutes it automatically. It's remarkably accurate, and without it, I doubt I could match the speed at which I type on the Jazz Jam. Of course, the corrective text means you start getting sloppy when you're typing, so when you hit a word that isn't in the dictionary, things can get messy. The iPhone's second impressive feature would have to be the Safari web browser. The iPhone has a beautifully crisp display, but Safari's usability comes from the ease at which you can zoom in and out on a page. Zooming in is as simple as tapping an area, but what's really impressive is Safari analyzes the page and takes a guess at what you're trying to see. If you click on a column of text, for example, it zooms in until that column of text fills the screen nicely, so you don't need to scroll sideways to read. You can also use a two-fingered pinch to zoom in and out. The third feature that caught my eye is the iPhone's SMS threaded conversation feature, which shows SMS conversations in a list, just like an instant messaging application. That's just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to the iPhone's usefulness. Sure, you can do this stuff on other phones, but you'll struggle to find one that does it as smoothly as the iPhone. Of course, if you're already a Mac user, the iPhone plays beautifully with your computer. While the iPhone is exciting, until we get an Aussie version, you need to install a few software cracks on it before it will run on local networks. You also need to install cracks if you want to install third-party software that doesn't have Apple's blessing, and these amazing applications are another of the iPhone's strongest features. I can understand why Apple wants to keep the platform locked down to ensure the phone doesn't become unstable, just like the way Apple locks down the Apple TV media player. Personally, I think Apple wants you to hack the iPhone just like it wants you to hack the Apple TV. That way users can have all the functionality they want, but Apple doesn't have to support these features. Apple is expected to launch an iPhone App Store in June to support third-party applications, so hopefully in a little while it won't be necessary to hack the iPhone to run all those great apps. I'm tempted to buy this hacked iPhone from the US, although a lot of people think we could have an Aussie iPhone within 2 months. It partly depends on how much the Australian iPhone costs and whether or not it's 3G. If Apple expects me to pay $1,000 for a 2G iPhone, then they've got a rude shock coming, considering the same thing can be bought in from the US for less than $500. If they offer a 3G iPhone at a reasonable price, I'm more likely to be interested. My Jazz Jam contract with Telstra runs until January, so maybe I could fool around with a hacked iPhone until then, and then maybe upgrade to a Telstra 3G iPhone on next G. As always, with Apple, it's just a matter of wait and see.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Well, hopefully the wait and see isn't too much more wait and see. Adam, what were you saying about SMSs in there? We were all talking in the middle of that. What does it do with SMSs?
It displays them in a thread the same way that when you... you've got an instant messaging application on your screen and you can see the messages that you've, the last few messages you've sent and received.
Mm-hmm.
You can see your SMSs displayed on the screen in the same order.
That's okay. Cool. I like that idea.
Now, I don't use SMS a lot, so I don't care so much, but people seem to have conversations over SMS. It probably cost them so much the idiot should have just made a phone call, but you know what I mean.
I know exactly.
For people who do that, it would be fantastic.
So it looks more like a chat line than an SMS browser.
Yes, it looks like a chat client.
The SMS, the telephone companies must be rubbing their hands together with
absolutely.
That. Absolutely. Who would have thought? Yeah. But I must admit, I run a device here, my mobile phone, which comes with a nice bit of software. And I talk from the laptop to the mobile phone regularly with you know, and the SMS software is on the actual computer. So I can't type on those little keypad things with my big thumbs for quids. So I use the software that comes with the phone on the laptop and talk to via my Bluetooth via my phone. So I'm having great fun
harassing people from afar now via SMS, and I'm not even touching the phone.
And you can probably type correctly too, and put whole words in instead of half of words and things.
Yeah, too right. You can type real things. So I find that really good. But anyway, you guys were talking about the stylus before and the old devices.
Well, Adam was saying that he had an iMate.
Yeah, I've got an iMate
by way
jazz
of comparison,
jar.
And I've got an iMate. The earlier one is a Jazz Jar.
Jazz Jar is a bigger one.
That's right, bigger one. That was one of the first ones.
And I've got the original iMate, or the XDA2 as it was known.
Oh, yeah, the XDA2.
I've never gone down that path.
They all need a stylus, don't they? They're all touch screens, and you need to tap them to...
Well, you can get by without a stylus.
Use your fingernail.
You've got to have a very finely sharpened fingernail.
Only some girls I know would probably suffice to that. But even the things that the courier guys come when they rock in and they say, here, sign this, and they give you a stylus-y thing, and you squiggle down there and think, great, yeah. So anyway, Optus have got on board with their 35-worded press release that was today.
Well, in the news we had Vodafone was the first, but by the time that the news was recorded and done and dusted, Optus had come out with their announcement.
Yeah, that was just today,
wasn't
it? 3
o'clock this afternoon.
There you go. And there was some unofficial Optus stuff a couple of weeks ago.
But... Oh, yeah, they've all been kicking around for a while. But Vodafone came out at 4 o'clock last Tuesday and caught everyone by surprise. And
including Apple.
Including Apple, because a few of us rang the Apple PR and they went, no comment. It sort of sounded like they weren't too thrilled. And then Optus came out with this one today.
And Apple have actually been advertising for jobs as well. There's been iPhone engineering jobs up on Seek, I think, for a little while. So
yeah, it's a bit of a giveaway, that. Mm. But if you look at Vodafone, they're a fairly sizable international or global company. And if you look at Singtel, which is Optus's parent company, they're pretty much along the same lines. They've got... not just the Australian market, you know, they've got Singapore, India, the Philippines, and all that sort of stuff as well. Do you think Apple's giving favoritism to the global companies because Telstra ain't?
Well, it would make sense because then you've only got to cut one deal, and you've
across many markets,
rather than mucking around with all these little pissy telcos who are, you know, should stick to their knitting. You can deal with a couple of big ones and get all these markets taken care of in one go.
That's right. You can leverage all the groundwork that you've done for other regions.
Makes good sense, really. It's like when we did the top 100 businesses last week globally, there wasn't one Australian company on there. Not saying Australian companies are not good in global marketplace, but I'm just saying it makes you pale into insignificance to some of these global players that are out there. So,
now, JD, you haven't got one yet. Are you waiting until the 3G version? What's
the
story?
I am waiting. I was interested in hearing Adam before say that he's going to use the Edge version, the 2.5 version, for a while. I'm quite happy to keep my iMate until the 3G version's out locally. I was certainly thinking about buying one internationally and hacking it to work here, but quite happy to sit back and wait for the right product that's tested and proven and working.
I think there's two types of Mac people too. There's the people that actually, like your good self there, JD, who look at a piece of equipment and buy it based on the fact that it can do this and can do that. Whereas you get other Mac aficionados, and I work with one who buys because it's got those five letters on the actual back of the... Yep. I don't care what it is, they'll just buy it because it's got Apple on it.
Could be a coffee cup.
Exactly right.
Can I just point out I've got 300 Apple computers at home, but I'm using a 10-year-old one at the moment.
Bragging again. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We're all in this evening. We're running out of time, so we'll go on with other things after the break.
You're listening.
Dr. Ron?
Here I am listening.
Residual powers.
And I've got some residual powers.
You can't turn off CDMA.
In terms of the volume,
over a standard fingerprints. Now,
we may have digressed.
Talk radio.
Bill Burgess also claimed the country would remain behind.
We used to think 600
don't open things second. That are good that you're not expecting, even if they do appear.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! This thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Son of a
How long's your laptop battery last, Andrew?
I don't got the power plugged into it tonight.
That's good.
Normally about 2.5 to 3 hours.
Two and a half to 3 hours?
Yeah.
JD?
Well, it tells me 5 hours when it's fully charged, but I don't believe it.
That's a Mac.
I get about 3.5 out of my MacBook.
3.5. This week's gadget is the Voltaic Systems Voltaic Generator Solar-Powered Laptop Bag. The Voltaic Generator is the first solar bag powerful enough to charge a laptop. So it's a soft bag that you put your laptop in, and it's got solar cells on the side. It uses high-efficiency cells to generate maximum power in the limited space available. It includes a battery pack custom designed to efficiently store and convert the electricity that's generated. It can also charge cell phones and most other handheld electronics. The solar panel generates up to 14.7 watts, which is powerful enough to fully charge a typical laptop from a day of direct sunlight. How good's that?
That's all right.
Excellent.
So if you're working a skyscraper, you got to hang your bag out the window to charge your notebook.
Yeah, hanging over the back of your the back of your chair, facing the sun, and it'll charge.
Hey, the good thing, it's renewable energy and it's free.
This is what I liked
about
it.
Well, not for the bag anyway. How much is the bag?
Does it it does. Hang on to your price tags. $5.99 US, but you can buy them online from www.voltaicsystems.com.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
This is a website, and it's a bit of a little software application as well, especially with after our discussion this week of security online and the cloud and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
Secure.logmein.com. If you go to secure.logmein.com, LogMeIn have got a vast array of products for doing this exact sort of thing. Online networking, virtual private networking, connecting computers together over the internet and sharing data. The product that I had to play around with during the week with Matthew Robinson, who lives in Denmark and is a frequent contributor to the program, is a package called Hamachi. It's an instant zero configuration VPN application. It's a virtual private networking application. There's versions for Windows, Linux, and OS X. If you install Hamachi on each machine, you can see the other person's Windows shares.
Okay.
Over the internet.
Oh, cute. Security.
Do you like that? Yeah. Or you can tell it to look at the Windows shares or to set custom shares. But we just said, oh, look at everything so we can get it going. And it worked extremely well. So you can actually share drives, share files, and
it's what's it called? I like this.
Secure.
I like the sounds of
this. Yeah. The website is logmein.com, and the product is called LogMeIn's Hamachi. So I thought I'd make that the Tech Talk Radio website of the week. We'll put the links in the show notes.
Be good.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Showtime. Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Graham Henley spoke to us last week about data recovery.
He did. It was very good too. I learned a lot.
A gentleman by the name of John Edwards in the United States does what Graham Henley does. He recovers precious data from computers that are wrecked in floods and fires. Now, Edwards may have set a new standard. He found information on a melted disk drive that fell from the sky when the space shuttle Columbia disintegrated in 2003.
That's a good effort.
It's an excellent effort, really, isn't it?
Edward said, when we got it, it was two hunks of metal stuck together. We couldn't even tell
it
was
gone through
a hard drive.
Hasn't it?
Has.
Yes.
It was burned and the edges were melted. He's an engineer at Kroll OnTrack outside Minneapolis. He said it looked pretty bad at first glance, but we always give it a shot. During Columbia's fateful mission, the drive had been used to store data from a scientific experiment on the properties of liquid xenon. Most of the information was radioed to Earth during Columbia's voyage, but Edwards was able to recover the remainder, which allowed researchers to publish the experiment in the April issue of a science journal, Physical Review.
Fantastic.
There you go. So it was a good salvage effort.
Pretty amazing to get information off. Yes.
He said it was also, the recovery was also made possible because the computer that was running was using DOS. And DOS doesn't scatter data all over the drives like modern operating systems do and modern file systems. So,
excellent.
It's a good, interesting odd spot.
Well done. Next week on Tech Talk Radio, we have Michael Cremean coming in to talk to us about mixing audio and cinema and stuff like that. He's a sound engineer who works on many television programs and mixed feature films and things like that. And if you've ever wondered how to set up your surround system in your home, how to do it, where to put your speakers and do all that sort of stuff, this will be the show to have a bit of a listen to. Man who does it professionally and he mixes stuff. And we'll talk to him about why the commercials on commercial television just seems that little bit louder than what the program does.
Yeah, because they run them 6 dB higher than the...
No, no, no. No.
He's going to dispel the myths, is he?
They don't. That's okay. The thing, and we'll tell you what they do and how they do it. But no, they legally don't run it, because when you submit a commercial to Free TV Australia, you must tell them that it's the right level.
Ah,
we'll tell you exactly what to do.
So trustworthy.
Absolutely. Speaking of trustworthy,
yes.
Anna Corrin, eat your heart out. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Adam.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday to you for Wednesday.
You guys have got really good sources of information.
On that note, before we embarrass him any further, we'll...
we're in for it now, aren't we?
Absolutely. Quick, let's run. You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio. Hopefully, we'll be on air next week. So, bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron Panlis, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations that take the show, including 3WBC and 3XX in Melbourne, Cairns FM, Switch 1197 in Brisbane, 95.3 Huon FM in Tasmania, Queer FM in WA, and Stop and Go Radio in the United States. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.